You are now listening to The Lance Gerv Show, the boldest spot on internet radio.
Jessica, you're back once again. You have something on your mind that you wanted to speak about, and I'm going to follow through with it because wherever you go, I'm going to follow you. I'm like that little trusting puppy. You always have something good, and you always take me to good places.
Well, I wanted to kind of step off of the usual path because, you know, we usually focus about my book and about relationship-related discussions. But as someone who is mixed, something else is on my mind right now. And it's recently, you know, I was in a conversation with other people who were mixed about that whole experience about not being 100% one or the other and some of the issues that are related to it. And I was watching a episode of Girlfriends in which that particular topic was approached, where the character Lynn, of course, is biracial, and she, the episode is called What's Black Alackin? Mm-hmm. And she's, of course, she's in a music label, and the artist or the record label, the A&Rs, don't know what to do with her because they said she's not black enough. Wow. And Chrisette Michele co-stars on this. She does a special pop-up, and of course, she is, according to the record label, the blacker artist. And they tell Lynn repeatedly, we don't know what to do with you. You're not black enough. We don't know what to fit you. We don't know how to market you. And she's saying, well, why can't I just be me and do the music that I do? Why can't I be a black artist?
Right.
So, yeah. And it is a reality. It is something that not everyone in either the black or the white community does this necessarily. But
right.
When you're mixed, you get these certain instances where, like, for example, okay, let's say this, like, a conversation about discrimination could pop off.
Mm-hmm.
And in some circles, being mixed doesn't hinder your participation. You can say what you want. In some circles, however, there's always this, well, how do you know? How do you really understand? Kind of attitude that comes out.
Yeah, yeah. See, everybody has their own experiences, and what I find with this is that it's crazy because it's perception. This is real. Racism mm-hmm. is real. The whole light skin, dark skin thing is real. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, we view the world, and we're flavored in our perceptions by what we go through.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to deal with that intangible because we all can be in a room, 10 of us, and see a situation pop off between two people, and we all get 10 different interpretations of that particular mm-hmm. scenario. So this is going to keep it going where there's always going to be some people who understand, there are going to be some people who get it and who mm-hmm. perceive it, and there's some, and most, and maybe most, I say, will be in denial about it. It's and then you have people of other races who observe it and say, this is just so crazy. And you have some people of other races who manipulate it and know it so well and use it to their advantage. So it's always going to be something. But
mm-hmm.
you best believe when you move through life and you get an averaging out of that perception on the situation, you're going to have to deal with it. It's all a matter of how you deal with it and move on, or you're going to let other people cloud you down with their mentality. Say, for example, you have a boss that you're dealing with who may be, and I'm just making these things up, who may be of a darker complexion. Now, we both know individuals of a darker, and this is relative, complexion, and people don't hold me down to any terminology because we're speaking in general here and we're in a very relaxed conversation, so we're not vindictive in anything that we say. But you may have some who are comfortable in the fact that they are darker, which mm-hmm. some people would say now, and I have to be very clear, what do you mean uncomfortable? I love the way but uncomfortable because of the way they were raised up to not like their complexion. And you have some mm-hmm. who are and who aren't. Now, say you have a person who is not, and they've been ridiculed all their life. Oh, you're black, you're mm-hmm. ugly, you're this, and they have it drilled in their head. And now here you come, you may be a black person who has a mixture leaving you with lighter skin, and different style of features, but you here you are proud in who you are, mixed and still identify as a black person, and you don't have those things in your head, but now you've become the enemy of that boss because now you represent the person that teased them. So now you have a problem. So you've got to really figure out what's at the core of this person's animosity toward you and know how to dissect it. So when we are in the workplace or in the church or even at home or in a family reunion, we have so many different things coming at us from the different mentalities and psyches that are dormant, and they don't state up front what they're going through. You've got to figure out this Rubik's Cube of a human being. Mm-hmm. And it's really challenging.
Well, it is. And, you know, and at the same time, it's like, why should anyone have to dissect that?
Yeah.
Why would anyone have to be on pins and needles? Because, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, like, it's an identity thing that, you know, as when you come up and you're mixed and everyone around you, you know, especially where I grew up, it was very much there was white and there was black, and there was no in the middle. You know, there were like maybe two or three of us in the entire school who would be classified as somewhere in the middle. And so identity as you grow up is already difficult as a child. And then once you enter into adulthood, so the reason why I'm mentioning it is because there is this idea in the minds of some people that being mixed somehow, you know, makes it easier or makes it better or whatever it is. But in all honesty, sometimes it can feel alienating.
Yes.
Because it's, on the one hand, you know, the white community doesn't 100% accept a mixed person into their circle.
Exactly.
And even those that do, as a mixed person in that, you're not that you're bothered by being around people who are 100% white or classified as that or whatever, but, you know, because I don't believe they are, but, you know, they're classified as that. There's a comfort level. You know, you're not necessarily, I don't 100% relate to you or whatever. We didn't have the same experiences, but, you know, there's this feeling of separation. And then being in the midst of a circle of predominantly black people, there is the feeling of, well, sometimes you're accepted and sometimes you're not. So you're kind of getting it from both sides.
Yes.
Sometimes you're accepted, sometimes you're not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when conversations come up, well, should I or should I not say anything about, you know, the certain discrimination or the certain events or whatever else, you know, because sometimes it can be questioned, well, why do you care so much, you know?
Yes.
So the mixed experience is very interesting, and it's something that has to be kind of dissected. Because, you know, in the United States, it's the mixed experience here is so much different from how it is in, say, like the Middle East and in South America.
Mm-hmm.
Entirely different.
Tell me about it.
Okay, so for example, in the Middle East, anyone whose family has lived in that region is classified by that nationality, whatever that nationality may be.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you'll go to Saudi Arabia. And in Saudi Arabia, there are families who have been there like hundreds and hundreds of years, right? And they look like, you know, some of them look African American, some of them look mixed, some of them look Latino, some of them look white.
Mm-hmm.
The Middle East, you know, ethnically speaking or, you know, physically appearing, runs the gamut. I mean, you think of Brazil, how there's like all of these various skin tones in Brazil.
Yes.
And hair textures. It is the same thing in the Middle East. Unfortunately, most of the time in the media, you don't get to see the diversity that exists there.
I noticed that.
Yeah. Now, go to my classroom, totally different situation. My classroom, when my Saudi students come in, you wouldn't think they're Saudi, most of them. You know, most of them, you're going to say, oh, that's an African guy. No, he's Saudi.
Right.
He's Arabic. Hmm. You know, he'll classify as Arabic. If you ask him, he'll say he's Arabic because that's where his family is from. And he's not denouncing the fact that he's dark skinned. He loves his dark skin. He thinks he's gorgeous. You know, he's very self-confident. But he'll tell you he's Arabic. He's not going to say black because he doesn't identify that way.
Right.
Now, when he comes here and somebody, you know, says he's black, he's like, no, I'm Arabic. They think he's being offensive.
Right.
But he's not.
Right, right, right. So we have so, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to compare it to South America because now in South America, of course, they do have some element of racism like what we do here in the United States. The difference there, though, is that, you know, they're Brazilian. They don't have to walk around talking about what kind of Brazilian they are. They are Brazilian. Now, they do have racial classifications, but it's not, from my perspective, talking to Brazilians, it's not forced on them and divided up as much. There's more ease of dating who you want, socializing as you want, being who you want to be.
Right.
Not that you have to be what is considered black or what is considered white.
Yeah.
There's more of a freedom in both of these areas
for
being
that.
Who you are.
I noticed that with many Brazilians. And when you take this on a worldwide level, it's something to have to figure out what classification you're in so I can know where to fit. Then I got to figure out how people see me, and then it changes from this situation to another, because to bring it back here for me as a black man, and see, I say that, but then if I was in Japan with a Klansman, And hear me out, people, a white Klansman, the Japanese would say, look, oh, there are two Americans over there. You know what I mean? and even though the Klansman may not like me because of the classification that I'm in as a black man, I'm going to be the first person he asks to find out where the hamburger joint is, because he doesn't eat sushi. So it's a headache to have to figure all of this out. But then again, when you...
environment changes everything.
Yes. When you've mastered it, it makes life a whole lot easier, because I'm very receptive and perceptive to what's around me. And I love to figure stuff out, and I've gotten pretty good at it. And so that's why I'm pretty much ahead of the game. I still catch my blows every now and then, not misjudgments, but miscalculations, because you understand. So sometimes I could be around a room full of Caucasians, and they may happen to be very poor, okay? And me being, I guess, classified as middle class or upper middle class, whatever it may be, they're looking at me like, oh my God, this guy, he's got something going on. He's got some money. And I'm thinking like, what money? You know, because of my activity level and the things that I pursue online, I may run into some affluent Caucasians who may look at me and say, this guy drives a bus, that's all he is. And then when they have a conversation with me and realize that I can take them around the world several times, just as maybe they can do the same with me, they say, wow, I can't judge this guy on what he makes or the position that he holds. So many people who are in the so-called dominant culture are guilty of not giving the benefit of the doubt and dealing with an individual on an individual basis. So sometimes they will lump something all in one because they're only dealings with people who are of a darker hue or on the news or these reality TV shows. And this is why sometimes you'll have them come to you, hey, man, what's happening? Yo, what's up, my man? You know, and I'm like, wait a second, where are they getting this talk from? I don't speak that way. I understand it when I'm in that environment and in the so-called hood, but coming from someone who's not used to talking that way, that's almost like when many Americans see someone who is of Asian descent and they start talking this a dubbed over karate flick type talk. Hi, how are you? I am so-and-so. And the guy may say, hey, man, you can relax a little bit. You know, like, wow, you're talking like an American. So there's so much that we have to cut through so that we can come together as one, because we have these barriers put up and we just can't seem to get past them. And that's what we stumble on and miss out on the gift of each other.
Absolutely. You know, speaking of the whole idea about environment and, you know, and people trying to judge based on appearances, when I was in my undergrad, I had gotten tired of the question, what are you? Because, you know, when you're mixed, you're going to get asked that a million times. Like, what are you? People seem to like it. They just, I guess by default, that they think they're permitted to ask that question. Like, it's just a thing to do. Whether or not they're important in your life, they'll just like, what are you, out of curiosity, which I get that. You know, you're curious, okay, whatever. But strangers who I'm never going to see again are like, what are you? why do you care? That's my thought immediately. So when I was, 19 and 20 years old, I got so sick of answering that question. I was like, I'm done with this question.
Right.
So for a whole year, when people would ask me, what are you? I would say, what do you think I am? And they would answer whatever particular answer they came up with. And I say, okay, that's what I am today.
Right.
And they, that look would be like what was that? Like they didn't compute quite well in their brain,
Yes.
And I'm like, yeah, that's me today. That's what I am. Well, and they would always ask me, well, why won't you just tell me what the answer is? And I said, well, to be honest, you don't need to know that. If you can't relate to me,
right,
based on what the way that I act and how I carry myself, then you don't need to know that. What does it change? And so my point by doing that, the many times that I did it, because even people that I did socialize with had no idea what I was because I wasn't explaining it.
Right.
By the end of it, I proved the point, though, that as Americans especially, but I'm sure in other areas as well, but I can speak on the American experience,
right,
Americans are trained to believe they need to know a person's racial makeup,
right,
in order to know how to act around them or what to expect of them. It's like, if only I can know what box to put you in,
right,
I know how to relate to you.
Right, right.
And it's so limiting because there's so much about a person that gets missed out on. And it's not just mixed people.
Right.
There's like you just mentioned, the way they're speaking to the Asian people,
mm-hmm,
the way that they interact, with a black person, if they, say things that they think, oh, well, you're black, you get that, right? What?
Yeah.
Like, they're missing out on so much and limiting so much of their own experience as well as the recipient's experience.
Mm. I think growing up in New York City helped me out a whole lot with the whole diversity, mm-hmm, thing, because even many people who grew up there don't get around. But so I can't just claim that. But I was a New Yorker from young who got around. My father took me around. My mother took me around. And it's just about every ethnicity, every race, everything up there, every mixture up there. And they have their own neighborhoods and they blend. And so I found that when I came down to the South, that there's more of that, I have to know what you are and what box to put you in. And so, the funny thing is that I take people as they are. For me to be in the category of, oh, he's a black man, there's so much more to me than that. I am that, but there's so much more to me than that, and than the box that they think the black man box should be.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how Hollywood forms and helps to form perceptions of what you should be. 10 years ago, it was this. Back in 71, I was Shaft. In the 80s, I was Run DMC. Whatever it may be that's hip in the so-called, and I always say it that way, mainstream culture, that's what I'm supposed to be. I've always been thrown into the category of being on the job, right? That strong black friend who will walk you to your car to keep you safe, or invite him because he's the black guy who automatically is going to assume the security role and be everybody's bodyguard. He's the black guy who can fight because he has a big head and big fists. He's strong, so we'll keep one of those around. I've been through that, but like I said, I think it helped me. But coming down to the South, I saw how it was more pronounced because you don't have asthma. Now, see where you are, you have it.
Mm-hmm.
Not everywhere.
For those that don't know, I'm in New Orleans, Louisiana, and
right.
I go all my life.
Right. I let you say that. I didn't want to say that and volunteer it for you. But yeah, where you are, there is that diversity, especially with the cultures. But see, you got to understand that most of America is not like that. Most of America, they're just now getting into Latino. It was black, white. And where it was white, when you were black, there's certain places that traffic will stop and they'll look at you like, oh, man, a black person. So we have these places in this country. It's not even in across the board, no matter what the airwaves present. Because, see, America with acceptance of race and diversity is almost like that schoolyard after a good rain. See, when you were in school and looking out in the schoolyard, the concrete schoolyard, okay, as the rain dried, the concrete wasn't paved evenly, okay? So as the rain dried, you saw some areas get dry faster that were higher, and the lower areas had the puddles. So you had puddles here back and forth. So if you were to look at America like a map, you would see certain areas are more accepting or more I wouldn't say open-minded, because really people are closed-minded, but you see that you'll get along easier and the people have more experience with different races and cultures of people. Other places, they're just going to be the way they are. The Bible Belt, certain areas there, certain areas in the Midwest, but the bigger cities are pretty much there. You see, but again, we have to understand what's around us. We can't change people. This is the big thing right now. People have to change according to their experiences and their own development. And sadly, many people will not change. They will transition holding on to the same toxicity that they've had all their life, the same ignorance. There are Archie Bunkers that will never change in this world. Archie Bunker from All in the Family back in the 70s. That particular type of personality. So we've got to master ourselves. We've got to learn how to navigate around the ignorance, navigate around the immaturity, and we'll be better off, because at the end of the day, the less punishment we take, the better off we are.
Be sure to check out more of Modern Traditional Lady at moderntraditionallady.com and get your copy of The Handbook to the Female Mind, How to Make a Modern Woman Act Like a Traditional Lady. It is available on Amazon and Amazon Kindle.
Make sure to check out the boldest blog at landscurve.com and follow Scurve on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube under Lance Scurve.